Welcome to the RC Noob Podcast. This is episode 24. I've got a really fun episode for you today. And you know, just after saying that, I think I may start every episode with those same words because every episode in my mind is just, it's exciting and it's fun. And there's always something fun to talk about and fun people and interesting people to talk to. And this show in particular is no exception. I have a very special guest that I had the good fortune of interviewing earlier this morning. Simon Crabb, who is part of the team on rccar.zone. If you're not familiar with that name, you should definitely run out to that website, rccar.zone, and check it out. It's a new RC hobby publication, digital online magazine website that really, it has the core crew that was previously involved in Radio Race Car International, RRCI. That publication ceases to exist right now. It actually closed up, or stopped being published a few months ago. And I guess from the ashes rose rccar.zone. Simon is their, one of their editors. He is their online marketing, really just marketing in general, individual. He has a history with the hobby. He's a hobbyist. He has owned a hobby store in the past. He's run a hobby blog. He's been there. He's done that. He's seen pretty much everything there is to see. So I was really excited to be able to sit down and have a nice, very long discussion with him and very eye-opening discussion with him about just not only what he's done within the hobby, but where he sees things going. I learned a good deal more about rccar.zone, the publication, where they are headed, what they're hoping to do with it. I'm really excited. I'm very happy to share this interview with you. So before we get to that, I just want to touch on a few news items from this past week. You know, this week is the International Toy Fair in Nuremberg, and there has been a number of announcements coming out of that show. HPI really brought their A game. I don't know number-wise how many new vehicles were announced or shown off from HPI, but it was just amazing to see what they all came to that convention with. Just a truly amazing amount of vehicles. And one of the more anticipated vehicles would be their Venture scale rig. And this has a Toyota FJ Cruiser body on it. And this is going to be really HPI's first foray into the scale trail rig market. I'm really excited to see what they can bring to the table that maybe Axial hasn't thought of yet, or maybe Viterra hasn't thought of yet, and even RC four-wheel drive or RC4WD. With that regard, the scale end of the hobby is something, if you've listened to the show, it's where my heart lies, and I really enjoy that end of the hobby. And for me, the more players that can be in that side of the hobby, the better. So it's interesting to see how that vehicle might shape up or might hold up against some of the other established vets. One thing that I have noticed about the HPI Venture, and actually I believe it's Venture RC, which is the spinoff brand that HPI is running this trail rig under. The motor placement is where you would find the motor or the engine in a 1-to-1 scale vehicle. It's would be right, you know, it's a front mounted motor, not a mid mounted motor like you're finding on Viterra or an Axial rig. So that's interesting. Performance wise, handling wise, you know, I'm not sure how that's going to affect, if it will affect anything like that, or either of those items. But yeah, that remains to be seen. So far, it's just been a lot of teaser information. There has been a video posted. There's been more information posted as the week has gone on, as the Toy Fair has gone on. And I'm doing what I can to soak that information up. There's been a few new accessories. Radio transmitters from Spectrum have been announced. Some interesting Android-based items. And you'll hear Simon and I discuss that a little bit later in the show. Just a bunch of information that has come out from the show and or from the Toy Fair. And it's an interesting time. It's a fun time to be in the hobby. And just a lot of things going on. There's a lot of movement. And there's no shortage of stuff. And just to put it in as plain terms as I can, there's just no shortage of stuff. There's something going on in every corner of the hobby. From surface to air vehicles to bodies to you name it, there's something new in every corner. And for me, that makes this hobby, it's one of the things that makes this hobby really interesting. If this is the first month of the new year, I can't wait to see what else is coming up down the line. So without further ado, I'd like now to present you with the interview that I did with Simon Crabb from RCCar.zone, the new RC hobby publication.
So I'm thrilled to have Mr. Simon Crabb join me today on the RC New Podcast. Simon is a part of Hivemind RC, and if that name doesn't ring a bell, maybe this next name will ring a bell for you. That is the company that has recently launched an online radio-controlled hobby publication, RCCar.zone, both a website and a PDF magazine with much more in the works. Simon, welcome, and thank you for taking the time to join me today.
Hi, Tim. No, it's great to be here.
So let's get right into it. I'm very excited to learn more about what you and the whole team at Hivemind are doing with RCCar.zone and your other ventures that you have planned. But let's start with you. What is your, for lack of a better term, what is your origin story? What got you into the RC hobby?
Well, for me, it was back when I was a child. I was maybe, 10, 11, 12, that sort of age. And I got given a toy for I guess it was a Christmas or a birthday present. And I loved this thing, and I drove it and drove it and drove it literally until the tires wore out, and literally until I'd wore holes in the plastic chassis from, hopping off curbs and things. And this thing wasn't an amazing machine, but I just played with it so much, and I don't know what it was, and it was just something that it was over there, but you were controlling it from over here, and that really got me. And we had a local hobby store in where I grew up, and it was maybe a mile away. And probably every week I would cycle up there and spend probably too much time. I'd no idea how long I spent in there. And it was called Sherman's, which I don't know whether it was named after the tanks or not. I don't know. Or whether that was the guy's surname. I've no idea. But it was one of those old school hobby stores with loads and loads of boxes of RC kit, and they did planes and trains, and so there was loads and loads to look at. And the thing that always attracted me was the Tamiya kits, those iconic boxes with the big splash of the car and the names, and those Bigfoots and Clodbusters. And I always remember buying, because you still have to buy the catalogue, and it was a fat catalogue. And I read that thing from cover to cover 100 times, I'm sure. And that insight into that world of these really detailed machines just fascinated me. So I saved up and bought my first Tamiya. I think it was a Thundershot, which was a great name, a Thundershot.
Yeah, that is a
cool name. That was the one where it had a single damper across the front. And one of the first hop-ups that everyone had to do on that car was to buy a second damper, so you had two dampers on the front. So it was a four-wheel drive, off-road thing. And so I remember building that up, and I was trying to seek out some sort of group that was, gathering to play or race with these. And I found this little club, and there was only a handful of us, but we played away with our Tamiyas and our Kyoshos, and I think that was the real start for me for racing, because I started racing these things, and they said, oh, well, over in the next town there's another club, and that's a little bit bigger, and then over in the next town there was another club which was a bit bigger again, and so before you know it, I was looking at what was competing and winning, and which car I had to get to compete in some way. And I ended up buying a Schumacher, mainly because they were a British company, even though the Schumacher name clearly isn't a British name. I think it's a German name. But Cecil Schumacher was the is noted with designing the ball differential. He was the first guy to do the ball diff. And at the time, that was there was the Cat and the Top Cat. The Top Cat was the two-wheel drive, and that's the one I got first, and then I got a Pro Cat as well. And me and my father, we travelled all over the north of England racing these things. I wasn't very good, but a club level. But I did it for a few years whilst becoming a teenager, and until I left home and went out into the world, really. And there was, the really good memories, really good times, and some heartache and pain when you lose or you break your car. But there was just something special for it. Yeah. So that's where I kind of really got started, was that whole Tamiya thing, and then the attraction of Schumacher being British. And I thought, oh, because British have a very strong national pride, as I'm sure all countries do. But to have a manufacturer in this country, I thought, I'm going to get those.
Yeah, that's a really neat story. I thank you for sharing that. I'm always interested to hear what got people into the hobby, kind of what was their first foray into it. And it's from everything I've heard from all the people I've talked to so far, it seems to always travel back to one, if not two, main themes. They got an RC car as a child. It may not have been very good, a toy grade. Maybe it was a tethered remote control car. That was my start. That got me into this. It was a New Bright Corvette that was tethered, and I drove that thing and beat on it. And I think it had opening doors. Those were gone by the end of that vehicle's life. But that for me, that's what really started it. And then I had gotten some other toy-grade vehicles as I had gotten older as gifts. But then the second main item is the RC car, either the RC car magazines or the catalogs. And those, you see all these vehicles. And like you were saying, you see the Tamiyas and you see the Kyoshos, and you name the different brands as they keep popping up. And you see all these different cars and how cool they are and how much just more realistic they look, quote unquote realistic, that they look from the toy grade stuff. And oh yeah, you want to get one of those. And I spent countless hours in high school or in middle school in the library just paging through our RC car magazines that we would get at the library. And then you see the price, and then reality sets in that you're maybe a kid or a teenager, and you have zero money to your name. So I was happy to finally get to a point where I could buy my first hobby-grade RC car, and it's been on from there. But it's I appreciate the fact that you're sharing your story, and it's there are these similar veins, and everybody else that I've talked to has these similar veins of interest and how they got into the hobby as well. But for me, that's just a fascinating aspect. So, okay, we've talked about how you got started. and you've been in the hobby for quite a while. What has kept you in it? What has kept you hooked? And really, what keeps you, what keeps that passion burning for these toy cars? And I, before I get jumped on, I know these aren't toy cars. I'm being real flippant, but you know, just what keeps your passion burning for these vehicles?
I think that's the thing, isn't it? That, you know, they are toy cars, but when you delve deeper and you get involved in the hobby, you realize that they're, you know, actually really sophisticated, well engineered machines. And I think that's it for me, is the engineering. And at the time I was through school, I was always fascinated in the, you know, in the techie sort of subjects, the computers, the maths, the physics, the technology stuff. And I was always fascinated about, you know, taking things apart, as all boys usually are. They take the back off the telly, and usually never get it quite back on again. But no. And I think it was that, the way things fit together, and it's that engineering thing. But like you said, I've been in it for such a long time, and I've taken breaks. You know, I've taken breaks of a few years at times, but I all seem to keep coming back. And it's just, there's just this draw, and it is just sort of some sort of passion. And I think it's that engineering thing. It gave the opportunity for a child to build something, to take a box of bits and screws and nuts and sprues. I always like the word sprue, you know, those plastic injection molded plastic.
Oh, sure.
Grid, and you have to, you know, cut off each part and to take it from that and into a thing that works, and then you can control and drive it, and you can race it, and you can make it perform at speed, and you realize that after racing a while that it's not actually an easy thing to do, and it's not something that you can't literally just learn it overnight. You know, it takes a lot of practice and refinement. And I think so, that engineering, that fact that you've got this whole machine and it's just sat there on the kitchen table in front of you, and it's small, but everything in there works. You know, you've got fully working suspension and oil-filled dampers and different spring rates and gear ratios, differentials, and all those things are found in full-size cars, but there they are. They're just sat there on your kitchen table. And that always amazed me. It always just... Because the amount of hours you spend building these things and repairing and cleaning, don't get me started on cleaning. the hours and hours I must have spent cleaning cars after a race day. But you know, that's part of the thing, is to be able to take it apart, but be able to get it back together again and make it work better than before. And it's that engineering thing. I've got a little story about the time when I was racing. I was racing a Schumacher, and the people that were doing well at the time were, my hero at the time was Jamie Booth, and he runs a distribution company in the UK now, and he got sponsored by the Tamiya factory. And that was, that's very exciting to see a Tamiya factory. But at the time, their kits were all plastic, so the chassis was all plastic, and they were very typical Tamiya. So they weren't that competitive to race with. So I remember Jamie and the Tamiya team developed a racing version of, I can't remember which car it was, and it was, I think it was the Manta Ray, and it had all the good bits. It had a good suspension and good drivetrain, but the bits that joined it together weren't too good.
Okay.
And I remember seeing his car and seeing this race version, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. And it just kind of made me think, you know, could I do something like that? Could I, you know, create a copy of it, create all the engineering bits that he's done, the chassis and the, you know, the alloy mounts and the shock towers and things like that. And sure. So I got a Manta Ray, and I raced it a little bit as straight from the kit. And I bought a lathe, and I started turning up these parts and you know, buying sheets of fiberglass. We didn't really do carbon fiber in those days that much because it was so expensive at the time.
Okay.
And I remember whittling away with a hand file and cutting out this chassis, and it all worked, and I raced with it, and I was, you know, I was just so proud to have built this thing, and so I think that's what I keep coming back to, is that engineering, that amazing way things fit together and so precisely fit together, because these machines are small and they have to be of good tolerance and things have to work well. Yeah, so it always draws me back every time. And I've raced off-road when I was a kid, and then I came back and raced touring cars, and then I raced off-road again, and you know, and I raced a few other classes in between, and each time it just amazes me how amazing the engineering is, and amazing how that technology works.
That's the ability to create your own parts and create your own, whether it's a chassis or a body component, or you know, even down to the some of the more technical aspects of these vehicles. It's interesting for me. I have a design, visual design background, so I don't dare tread in some of those waters. But I've seen people that have the knowledge and have the know-how and the tools to modify and to create their own custom parts. And that just blows me away. And I have a further appreciation for the hobby, because you can make of it what you want. And you know, the engineering part is—it's just an engineering marvel if you think about it. That these vehicles, given their scale, can do so much and have so much built into them. Provided you know, if it's a kit, you put it together correctly. But then that's back on the user. I just thought of this question, and I love asking this question of people too. So what cars do you have in your quote-unquote RC garage right now?
Well, that's an interesting question for me, because I don't have very many. I've never been a collector.
Okay.
A lot of people do collecting, you know, and they have dozens, hundreds of cars, and, you know, and they keep them fresh in the box, or they build them up and sit them on the shelf, and you call them a shelf queen, and they never,
yeah,
they never use them. And
never seen
and then there's
day.
People who... You know, there's some people who collect race cars, and I'm always fascinated by the people that the pros, the top guys, that when they win the world championships, they take the car off the track, they disconnect it, and it's never touched again, and that's the car that won that championship, and I always find that amazing, that you know, it's like a moment in time. And people collect these and trade these. I heard of someone recently buying a European Championship winning car from sometime in the 90s, and he was, you know, and it was like, oh wow, look at that, a slice of time. Wow. But for me, I've never been a collector. And right now, I think I've got one review car, and I've got one broken Tamiya, because I seem to use them. And I seem to be, you know, fascinated. And then I go on to the next thing. So there's always a churn for me. So I don't do that collector garage thing, which is peculiar, you know. And when I ran a shop, of course, you know, there was a lot more at that time. But sure. Personally, no, my garage is very empty.
Very empty. Okay. It's so. Let's get to, I think, the big topic, the one that I was excited to see, excited and saddened in the same way. For those of you that have been in the hobby for a while, you may have heard of Radio Race Car International, RRCI. That publication has been around for quite a while. I have been an on and off reader of it. Just when I have time, I'd pick up an issue or download an issue and read it. And that publication ceased to exist as of a few months ago. And from those ashes rose a new opportunity. And Simon, you're part of this RCCar.Zone. With RCCar.Zone, they just launched their first issue, I'm going to say maybe a month ago, a month and a half ago. You're working on issue two right now. It is right now a PDF publication, but I know you guys have plans for more. I signed up right away as soon as I found out about this publication and who is behind it. And after reading the first issue, I'm very excited to see what else comes out from it. But with, I guess, Simon, I'll throw it to you, and I'll let you give a little bit of an intro to the magazine. And then I would like to touch on your experience, given your past experience, how has that given you insight with this new venture?
Yeah, the magazine is... Well, let's just rewind a little bit. When I was growing up, I remember Radio Race Car, RRCI, Radio Race Car International, and it's been through a couple of iterations. But I think it started back in the 80s, late 70s, 80s. And I remember buying it as a child. And there was another one in the UK. It's a UK magazine, the RRCI, and there was a competitor magazine called Model Cars. And I think, I'm not 100% sure on this, I think that is what developed into the Racer magazine that we have in the UK at the moment. And Radio Race Car International, as you say, carried on until just a few months ago. And I was a bit saddened to see it go. I was thinking, oh, that's a shame, isn't it? You know, it's something that's been around forever.
Yeah.
And I knew Peter Gray, the editor, and he gave me a call one day and he said, now, you can't tell anyone this, but Radio Race Car is going to close down. And I thought, oh, wow. And he said, do you want to do something about it? And I thought, do you want to do something about it? That's, you know, and he was said, you know, do you want to help me publish a new magazine to replace it? And I didn't have to think for very long. you know, it was really good timing for me. It was in my career. I was in a bit of a gap, and if you'd asked me a year before, I wouldn't have been able to do anything. But you know, it was perfect timing, and it took a lot of thinking, a lot of planning, as you can imagine. But we gathered a team together from the remnants of the Radio Race Car publication and headed out on our own. We formed a new company and said, right, well, let's build a new magazine. Let's launch a new magazine. And the name, we had to come up with a name, and we were throwing around all sorts of ideas. And I came up with RC Car Zone, mainly because in the internet domain name world, .zone is a relatively new extension. And I thought, oh, we could do something clever there, and I'm sure we'll come back to the internet-y type stuff in a moment or two. But so the RC Car Zone name kind of come out, and that's what we ran with. We thought, right, we've got to get this we've got to run with something. It doesn't have to be perfect. And so we spoke to a lot of people in the industry and said, you know, Radio Race Car's going, and that's a print magazine, and we wanted to replace it, but we want to do something a little bit different. And in the way it was different was that the first way was that it was digital and it was online, and people could download it and read it on their computer screen, their tablet, their phone, to give it the opportunity to get to the maximum number of people we could. And the second thing was that we were going to make it free. And a lot of people said, free, but how do you pay the bills with free? And I knew that if you could give something away, you get a higher circulation and you you base the business on the advertising revenue, on the
sure.
the people that advertise with you, and the manufacturers, the distributors of the cars that we so love. And so that's what we've done. We've created this magazine, and all the advertisers said, "Oh, that's great, that's great. Oh, can we see something? Can we see a copy?" And I thought, well, you know, well, we haven't done it yet. So the first issue was kind of that. It was that test bed, and we had to create something which showed that we were serious and showed that we could do this, and that we had the right team in place, and that it was going to look good, and it was going to work technically, and people were actually going to read it and be able to download it, and that print didn't actually matter that much. So we did it, and as you say, issue one came out, and you said it was a while ago. It was 28 days ago it came out, and it. So we really stupidly decided to launch it on the 1st of January. And we was actually a week late with it. We were going to launch on Christmas Day,
okay.
but you know, we did the whole thing in 2 weeks, and we didn't meet the deadline. So we launched it on 1st of January, and I think that the Christmas Day would have been the worst day of the year to do it, and the 1st of January I think was the second worst day of the year to do it, because you know, you're still full of food and.
Yeah.
But we, you know, so there was a lot of work done over the holiday period for us. But so we got it out, and it wasn't perfect. People found mistakes, but that's fine. You know, it's the first issue. If there's mistakes in issue 100, then I may be more upset about it. So, but I think we've produced a magazine which is, it looks good. It looks like a model car magazine. It, you know, reads well. It's got good depth. It's got advertisers. You know, people advertise with us right from the start. And for me, you open up the cover and the very first advert is with Tamiya, and that just made me especially proud of myself to think that the people that started it out were the people that is the very first advert in the magazine. And. And for issue two, they were the very first advertisers said yes, we'll advertise again. You know, and they loved what we did, and so as you know, that makes me personally feel very proud.
Well, that's great. That's great. I'm gonna gush on you guys for a little bit. I'm a huge fan of what you're doing, from the approach that you're taking, from the finished product that you have rolled out, at least with issue one. Like you said, it looks like a RC magazine. It feels like one, even though you don't have that physical item there. The choice that you've made to go away from traditional print and toward digital speaks to me, because that's how I consume a good majority of my content. I'm not, I like, you know, every once in a while picking up a book or picking up a magazine, but then after a while, you know, I can't, it's not as portable. You know, with digital, it's on your phone, it's on your tablet, it's on your computer, it is wherever you are. And whenever the mood strikes me, if I want to, you know, reread your article on the Axial RR10 Bomber, or, you know, read whatever, whenever, I can do that. So for that, I'm a huge fan of what you guys are doing. I'm a huge fan of issue one. I can't wait for issue two. With everything that you have done personally in the hobby, how has that aided you and the rest of the team in launching this new venture? And how have all of your personal experiences with the hobby helped you?
Okay, I suppose it comes from various angles for me. This project for me is kind of like it's the sum of everything I've done so far, all in one project, which is, you know, really exciting for me. So, I guess the first thing is knowledge. You know, I've got a as if I do say so myself, an excellent knowledge of the industry, and you know, I know how these cars work and I know how they're put together and I know how the racing scene works and I know how the other scenes, the bashing scene and the scaling scene and the drift scene, they all have their different flavors and work in different ways. So I've got a good broad knowledge of how the actual RC cars work, which is really important when you're talking about them, because you can, you know, you if you're writing something about a particular car, you need to know how the suspension should work to be able to tell the reader if it works. And as one of the editors, I have to do the same thing for our contributors. They send something in, and I have to be able to spot whether it's if it's accurate or not. And you know, someone who didn't know anything about it wouldn't be able to do that, because it is, you know, a very technical subject. And I think the other aspect is the knowledge and the experience of the industry and the people within the industry. I'm in daily contact with people that were around when I raced as a child, you know, 25. Oh, I'm getting old. I dare to think about the age. 25 years ago. And, you know, some of the same people are involved now. And to know, think, oh, well, that's him, isn't it? And knowing the industry and who runs what and who owns what and the actual how the industry works is really important. And as I touched on earlier, I did run a model car shop. I ran a store called rclazy.com, and we ran it as a it started off as a blog about, you know, what me and a few mates were doing, and then we started selling some little bits and pieces, and then it just it blossomed and grew into an e-commerce store, and then I got a physical bricks and mortar premises, and we opened it up as a real model car shop, and running that gave me a good insight on how the commercial aspects of the RC industry work, and you know how the money moves around and how the products get made and how they get distributed, and that's all really important to form relationships for. The products that we're covering in the magazine, whether it's as a review or, you know, a report or an article about the people behind that, because I'm fascinated about people and how people work. So one of the things we've got is we're doing more about the actual people. So in issue one, we had an article about Atsushi Hara, which, you know, he's a pro driver. He gets paid to race, and so we got some, you know, behind the scenes information of how he goes about testing a brand new car. So that's in issue one, and then for issue two, we've got some more interviews lined up, and those sorts of things about people is really interesting, because that's what, you know, makes the industry really. So I think that's about, you know, the RC. So those sorts of things coming together are really useful. And when Peter Gray asked me to get involved, he asked me because he knew I was the internet guy. You know, I knew about the internet, I knew about business, I knew about marketing, and I knew about RC. So I could actually make it happen. Because Peter's really good at the relationships and the editing and the concept, the image of, right, we need to do this time. And we kind of overlap. So he's got some skills which I don't have. I've got skills that he doesn't have. So the team we've pulled together, and the team is surprisingly big. It's bigger than I expected it to be. There's probably, you know, 10 to 20 people involved in each issue at the moment.
Wow, that's
exactly good. Exactly. I was, you know, and I was thinking, oh wow, okay. You know, it went from a conversation of, do you want to put a magazine out, to, do you want to manage all these people? So, but that's fine, because I've been running my own businesses for 15, 16 years, I've got lots and lots of skills in, you know, marketing and internet marketing. And so I knew that we could do something different. And I had the confidence that we could produce a free digital magazine and make it work commercially, which is the exact opposite of what traditional print media does. You print a magazine, a physical thing, and you sell it, and that's the opposite. So I was, you know, I was confident that we could take a slightly different model and do it in a different way to the competitors. And I'm not one of those people who hate competitors, because I feel that, you know, we all do it differently. We all do something slightly different, so we all kind of fit together in a big jigsaw. So so to do it differently, I always like the term to zag where others zig. And they're zigging away, and we're going to be zagging over here, and together we form that zigzag, and we do our own thing, and it helps the industry as a whole.
That's a great way to look at it. That's a really good way to look at it. I know when I got into the hobby, for whatever reason, either I was incredibly naive or was blind to the fact that there were so many RC websites and. I had known that there were publications out there, but just from the website aspect of it, I wasn't finding much. So then as we were chatting before we started recording the show, I started rcnoob.com. Well, then, you know, as soon as you start something, or I find this with vehicles, as soon as you buy a vehicle or kind of get an idea that, oh, this is going to be my next future vehicle, specifically like an on-road machine, one-to-one scale, you see those cars everywhere. Well, now, you know, as soon as I launched the website, I'm seeing RC websites everywhere. It's like, oh, that was a good choice, Tim. You know, yeah, no websites out there about RC cars. Nope, not at all. But we're all in competition in some way, shape, or form. But I think, you know, to your point, that we all help the greater good of the RC hobby. For me, that's why I'm, you know, doing the show and doing what I do on my end. And what you guys are doing on your end is also helps immensely, you know, with people that are getting into the hobby, people that have been in the hobby for a long time, and they want to know what the latest and greatest is, and they want to get that expert opinion of what's coming up and what's good, what isn't, and what could use improvement. So that part is very interesting. I do want to real quickly touch back on your point about it being people. And I found that too. It's, for me, the people almost interest me more than the vehicles. You can talk specs and you can talk tech features and you can talk just, you know, features for a while. But then after that, it's just the vehicle. It's what the people then do with those vehicles, from the racing, from the scale aspect of it, to drifting, to just basher folks. You know, it's the people that really make this hobby interesting. And I really enjoyed the interview, that first article interview that you did with issue one, and I can't wait to see what else you guys publish from that regard, from the people aspect. So that's very interesting. So with issue one in bed and issue two soon to be launched, judging by some of Peter's Facebook posts, what, I guess, just even beyond issue two, what do you see down the road, short to midterm, for RCCar.zone?
Okay, so I think this is a question where I've got to be careful not to make too many promises.
Oh, yeah, sure. But, say, you know, say whatever you can say.
Yeah.
By all means.
So, yeah, I think things have been moving really quickly for us. We've gone from the idea of, oh, should we put out a magazine to replace Radio Race Car? And we've done that. And I think it surprised a lot of people that we said, oh, we're going to produce a new magazine, and we actually did. And it's in digital format, and the the big question that everyone's been asking is, are we going to offer a print version? And so that's one of the big tasks that we're looking at. The main issue with print is that it's logistically a different problem to solve than a digital version. And it's in some ways a more expensive problem to solve because you're dealing with actual physical paper and printing, and so I've been tasked with trying to sort that out. And I was in a printer's the other week, and he says, "Oh, so this is the machine that we'd be using to print it." And I goes, "Oh, that's a nice machine." And it was, it was the size of a house. And I thought, okay. And he goes, so in my head, I was thinking, well, how much does one of those cost? And I was thinking, is it, £100,000? And he says, well, that cost us about £1 million. And I thought, oh, okay, this is, this is a different sort of thing. And so it is a big question, and it is something we're working on. And we might not do it the same as you expect us to do it. So, in the same way, traditional magazines are zigging over here, but we might do a bit of a zag over here and do something different. But we do kind of, it is one of our aims to actually have a physical thing, because people like physical things, and it lends itself to those collectors. Those collectors I talked about earlier that have hundreds of cars. People collect magazines, and I used to do this. I remember collecting Radio Race Car and Model Cars magazine back in the day, and I've collected other magazines over the years. And I've always been fascinated by the publishing industry and how it works. And I was lucky to work for some big publishers back in 2000. I worked in the dot-com industry, and I helped put some traditional magazines online. And so that kind of gave me an insight into the magazine world. So that came back to the previous question you asked about sort of knowledge and what I bring to the table, I guess.
Sure.
And I've gone off track now, and I've forgotten what you asked me and what the actual question was, and even if I'm answering it or not.
You're doing great. really, what's up next?
What's up next? Of course. So what's up next for us is that we've got to make this magazine into a regular monthly thing. It's fine to say that we can produce a magazine, but we've got to do it every month. And issue two's coming up soon. It's very nearly ready. And we've got to do that every month, because it's going to be a monthly thing. And to do that, we've got to get a good process in place. And so that's more of the boring stuff, more of the back end businessy stuff of building a business, building a new business, and the people and the tasks and the cash flow and all that you need to think about. So that's the main thing going forward, is that it's going to be, it's an ongoing publication. It's not a one-off thing. We haven't, this issue one isn't RC Car Zone. It's an issue of it. So, it's going to be monthly, which is really exciting. So we can, keep on going. And alongside that, there's obviously a website, which will develop, and the social media profiles, they'll develop and build out. And we're doing this very organically and very step by step, and we're doing it in the visibility of the public. The people are watching us do this, so we're not just doing it and everything's ready and then we're going. We're actually building it as we go, which is, it means that it's not perfect from the beginning, but at least we're doing it. That's the important thing. So the other things that we've got planned, there are some projects alongside RC Car Zone, which are RC car related. So there's a few things we want to do there. But on the other side, as a publisher, we're looking at publishing other magazine titles as well. So okay. I think it's pretty common knowledge that one of the areas we're looking at is the drone, the multi-rotor flying UFO machines.
Sure, the helicopters and things like that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So that's one of the areas we're working with to produce publications in that area. And then there's talking for in other hobby areas. It's amazing when you start something, people approach you and say, "Oh, have you thought about doing something for underwater basket weaving?" And we go, "Oh yeah, we could do underwater basket weaving. Yeah, yeah, we could do something about that." So you know, it turns out we seem to be building a whole publishing company and not just a single publication. So it's much bigger than what you see at the moment. There's lots of really exciting conversations going on, which I can't talk about. And
sure.
And it's nearly every day Pete comes to me and go, "Oh yeah, we've just been talking to X, Y, and Z," and I go, "Oh, whoa, you know, that's real big business, real, you know, it's not hobbyists in a bedroom. It's you know, it's real business." So
yeah.
So it's an exciting project for me. Yeah.
Well, that's really exciting. That's really exciting. I have my fingers crossed that you guys will do something with underwater basket weaving, because, you know, that's ready to break through. I just feel like...
I think so. You know, it's we're just wondering how we can do that competitively and get some sort of competition in there and get some sort of, you know, prizes and leagues and things going in there. So if you've got any ideas on that, do let me know.
I'll mull that over.
Okay.
Wow, so you guys, you definitely have a full plate with not only the RC car surface vehicle stuff, but, you know, the quadcopters, dealing with the phenomenon that is the quadcopter boom, really. It's, for me, it's been fascinating. I flew my first quadcopter maybe a year ago, a little less than a year ago. My father picked one up. Just so he can kind of survey their land that they have and just kind of check things out. So I flew one. So to my surprise, I didn't crash it. And they are fun. And I see more. I truly wish that the surface side of radio controlled had as much buzz, you know, going around it and just really a mainstream buzz and appeal as quadcopters do. But I mean, the amount of buzz that it has is fine. It's fascinating to then see the different offshoots that quadcopters have been taking, from your really, you know, your general hobbyist to your first person video, you know, the FPV, the racing. That is going to be an interesting, that's going to be an interesting path to observe and to follow. And just real quickly, since, you know, I focus on the surface stuff, but this is, I think, just a really interesting topic. And there's been some recent news articles about the FPV quadcopter racing. I believe you shared a video with, or an article with Peter, and we're Facebook friends. I saw that as well. And it,
yeah,
was,
yeah,
an interesting video. An interesting article. Where do you, I guess, real quickly, where do you see that going from the, I guess, the competitive quadcopter racing aspect?
Yeah, yeah, it was interesting what you said about. It's interesting. The buzz for the quadcopter stuff is big compared to the model cars, the RC cars, and we've always been amazed in the RC car industry that we've got professional drivers. There's, you know, there's people who get paid money to drive toy cars, and that's, you know, when it first started happening, it kind of blew my mind, and it still does. It still amazes me that people spend, you know, 200 days a year overseas racing toy cars for their job. It's, you know, amazing. But the quadcopter stuff is, I hate to use the term next level, but it really is next level stuff, and it's gone straight past, you know, in a really short space of time, it's gone straight past that professional level, and it's gone to, you know, huge prize money. Not people just being paid by the manufacturers, but they're actually there's prize pools of there's something in Dubai with $1 million prize pool, and that's big, wow. You know.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it's like, wow, okay. And it's fascinating why it's caught the attention of the public. And I have this conversation pretty much every day at the moment, is, you know, why is it attracted that media attention, attracted the sponsors, the coverage, which the model car racing never really has. And it's a little bit... It's a bit peculiar, and it's been, you know, quite difficult to figure it out. And I think it was summed up in a video I shared yesterday. I think it was where there was the FPV guys had taken a football stage in Miami, I think it was, and
yeah,
they'd set up this course in this empty stadium using lights to show where the pilots should fly, and it was flying around the seating areas. And I thought, oh, that's cool, you know, flying around the seating areas, you know. And then suddenly it went backstage and it went through one of the tunnels into the bowels of the stadium. And I thought, oh, now that's clever, because the guy flying it probably, you know, I don't know where he was. He could have been anywhere. And right. And it suddenly took on this dimension of being carried through on this journey through this building, which you wouldn't get to see in that way. We all drive cars, but we don't all fly planes.
Sure.
And I think that was the thing, that suddenly you could fly through structures and places that we all know about, but we don't get to see from that perspective. So I think that's what it is for me, because I've obviously done a lot of thinking about this, haven't I? and it gives the person a viewpoint from a completely different point of view that they've ever seen before. They've seen things from real aeroplanes, and they've seen things from car point of view, but they've never seen, you know, flying around the world that they live in, and it kind of it takes you into that sci-fi type of scenario of flying cars, and, you know, and actually being able to pilot around your neighborhood, and I think that's what it is. I think it's taken it from realism to, you know, fantasy, and it's kind of joined them together in this really exciting, whoa, look at that sort of way, which unfortunately the model cars never quite do, because they're you know, relatively they're exciting, but they, you know, relatively they're contained, they're within a small area. And I think that's what it is. It's, you know, it's actually exciting to the general public because they get this weird viewpoint, this crazy fast moving, whoa, what's going on here sort of thing.
Yeah, that's really a great way to look at it, and it's almost the bringing video games to real life. Especially with that FPV, because your eyes are then effectively replaced by what this drone is seeing, what quadcopter is seeing, what the camera is seeing, and it's that real life video game.
Yeah, the video aspect games. Because I'm not a gamer, and I'd completely forgotten about that aspect, but. Yes, of course, because in a video game you're taken into another world, and this hobby, the quadcopter flying, seems to bridge the gap between something that's real and something that's not quite real, but it's making it real. It's frankly, it's amazing, and it's very exciting, as you said, to see that development of a new hobby just suddenly blowing up. Almost out of nowhere, and, you know, into the mainstream.
Yeah, and it's, you know, for me, it's RC, and if that draws more people to other aspects of RC, if it's surface, if it's boats, you know, it doesn't matter as long as it's drawing more positive attention to the hobby. Then I'm all for it. And I'm definitely keeping an eye on on what quadcopters do in the different offshoots and veins that they end up sprouting off into. But that was really interesting. Interesting viewpoint. I appreciate you sharing that.
No, it's been something that's been fascinating me over the last couple of months since being involved in this project and being in contact with these various people.
So I think I'll just to wrap up. I wanted to see what given this week is the International Toy Fair in Nuremberg, and there have been just an enormous amount of product announcements and releases, especially HPI. They have just brought their A game and then some with all the new vehicles and all the new stuff that they're releasing. And there have been new radios and new transmitters and new, just, it's like Christmas came a month late.
yeah.
Almost. With that, those items in mind, with everything that's been announced, even in the last couple months, what one or two things, whether they be vehicles or technology on the RC car, surface RC side of things, what excites you the most, or what do you see the most promise in as far as, you know, just developing and things really taking hold in the hobby?
I know what you're saying there. It's I've always been heavily involved in the racing of RC cars, and it's very difficult to get into it because it's difficult to actually build cars that perform that well, and it's difficult to drive them, and it's a relatively small area of the hobby. And what I've noticed coming out of Nuremberg is that lots and lots of announcements have been based around the opposite end of the hobby. It's around the people that, you know, the bashers and the people that just want to get a vehicle and play with it at the weekend, you know, and be a kid. And sure. And those things are really interesting. And as an extension of that is the scalar area. And that's the area that's it's about building machines which look real. And as you said, HPI brought out a scale, the FJ, is it the Toyota? And I thought, oh, look, that looks cool. That looks real. And I think that area is going to be bigger and bigger. We're part of the team organising an event this year in the UK, the Recon G6 scalar event. And I think there's something like 300 entries or something for it at the moment. So that's, you know, that's big, and that's bigger than any race event in the UK. And it's like, oh, okay, that's something to take notice of. So I think scalar, those, and I think that attracts the general public because they can understand it, they can do it because it's not, you know, it's not too difficult to control those machines, And the technical stuff, as you mentioned, some new radios, and I noticed Spectrum have brought out an Android-based radio, and I know there's a couple of other touchscreen radios, but Android-based, I thought, oh, wow, that's actually, you know, that's where the future should be. That's where we should be controlling our machines with devices that we already know how to control. So I think there's lots of stuff coming out which is going to be of attraction to people outside the RC car industry, which is great because if it gets them in the hobby and gets them interested, then, you know, it's good for all of us that are involved.
That's interesting that you've said those, because really those two areas, both from the, you know, the tech advancement, adding additional tech features to the radios, which really can be an overlooked thing. You tend to focus on the car, the vehicle, and not the other components. But having a great radio can mean all the difference. That and the scale aspect, and that the scale area is one that I never imagined myself being as in love with as I currently am. But I'm all in. I love just the details that you can either craft yourself or 3D print. And man, that's another topic for another show. But all the different things that you can do with scale to make these 1/10th, 1/5th, 1/8th, whatever scale vehicles look like the one that you drive or the one that you've always wanted to have. Those are two areas that I think are just going to take off. And my fingers crossed that we're right on that. Cause that's going to be interesting to see as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Simon, thank you very much for joining me on the show. If people would like to get in touch with you or, learn more about RC Car Zone, how would they go about doing that?
The website is the first port of call, which is obviously rccar.zone, and there's no .com on there or anything. The .zone is the domain name, and that's kind of cool, I think. But I'm a geek, so it would be. And our Facebook page similarly is rccar.zone. And those are the two areas where you can get in touch with us, and we're really keen to, you know, to get feedback on what we're doing, on what we should be doing differently, on what people want to see.
All right, so that's really great information. If you have not yet subscribed or checked out rccar.zone, I fully endorse doing so. Great publication. It's a PDF, it's free, and you know, the fact that you can read it whenever, I don't see any downside to that. Plus, you're learning great information about the RC car hobby. So if you're, no matter what level of you are within the hobby, whether you're a beginner or a seasoned vet or you're in between, there's always something new to learn. So definitely go check out RC car. Zone. And again, Simon, I thank you very much for taking the time to join me on the RC Noob podcast. Very much appreciate this, and hope to chat with you soon.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure, Tim. It's been really good to join you today.
So there you have it. I want to thank Simon Crabb again for participating in this episode of the RC Noob podcast. For more information on rccar.zone, definitely check out their website at rccar.zone. Beyond that, if you want to get additional episodes of the RC Noob podcast, check out rcnoob.com. We've got everything linked there. Subscribe to the podcast from our website. Check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Google+, you name it. We're there. We're always trying to find something new to talk about the hobby. We've got a bunch of fun reviews planned that I've yet to begin writing, but just fun products, fun reviews that we're looking at, and just, you know, spreading information about the hobby to as many people as possible. And that's what this show and the website are all about. So with that said, I do thank you for listening, and keep those nitro tanks topped off and keep batteries charged, and we will see you next time.